on page 13. The Bible declares there is one true God. Now, I think you'll find that teaching, the oneness of God, in both the Old Testament and the New. There is but one God. Now, here's an interesting thing. When God begins in the book of Genesis, he simply states, in the beginning, God. He does not argue his existence. He simply presumes it. In the beginning, God. Now, what better place can you begin than with God? How else can you begin? Unless you take the position that one man took when he said, there was no beginning. Now, you try to get a hold of that and you go into an intellectual tailspin. There was no beginning. I can't get a hold of that. Now, while I've always believed there was God since I was big enough to believe anything, I believed it before I was even taught that there was a God. There are evidences, indisputable evidences, that there is a God. And I'd like to talk about that just a little bit. Evidences of God. I don't think I need to prove to you that there is a God. I don't think I need it for myself to prove that there is a God. But I think these things are worth recording, learning. First, the universal belief in God. The universal belief in the existence of God. There has never been a race or a tribe anywhere in the world that does not believe in some kind of a supreme being. Now, don't be afraid to make that statement. That will stand the test. I don't care where you go. You will find people who accept the fact of a superhuman being. It may be distorted, of course, but there is the recognition of this power. Now, we sometimes call that intuition. We sometimes call it innate knowledge. That is, it's knowledge you don't have to learn. You don't have to learn it in a book, from a book. I have given this illustration, and I repeat it for those who have not heard it. Helen Keller, at the age of 2, lost her sight and her hearing. Now picture this little 2-year-old girl who could not see, who could not hear, and who could not talk. And for many years she was shut up in a world of darkness with no communication with people around them. If you haven't read the story of Helen Keller, you ought to read it. There's the account of how Ann Sullivan, that wonderful teacher, who through the means of touch broke through the barrier and taught Helen Keller. And the amazing thing is that she went ahead to study and become a university graduate. I heard her speak to a joint session of the Arkansas legislature. She has never heard herself speak. She learned to speak by putting her hand to the throat of people who could speak and imitating the movement. I'll never forget the feeling I had after looking at that woman and hearing her speak. I had been a little down before that. I was on a pretty narrow margin financially, and I'd tied in the Greek and Hebrew plus a few other things, and you know how you feel sorry for yourself. But I saw her and heard her, and then I felt like one of my friends ought to take me out back to the building somewhere and just give me a good kicking. I had 20/20 vision with glasses. I could see, I could hear, I could talk. I had average intelligence. Why should I feel sorry for myself? But here's the punchline. After Helen Keller got up 12, 13, somewhere in there, there was a preacher who communicated with her and told her that there was a God and that she was responsible to that God. That as a human being, she needed to repent and put her faith in Jesus Christ. And she said, I've known there was a God for years. Let me ask you, who told Helen Keller there was a God? Well, I think God himself did. And I think God himself tells people all over the world in a sort of an inexplainable way, what we call innate knowledge. They don't have to read it out of the Bible. They know there is a God. Now, I didn't say nature preaches the gospel, but I'm saying that people know there's a God. It's a universal thing. Now, let me ask you this. Since there is a universal knowledge that there is a God, does it make sense that there is that universal knowledge of something that isn't so? The fact that there is universal innate knowledge that there is a God is proof to me that there is a God. Otherwise, how do you explain that? Why would God plant within each one of us the consciousness that there is a God? If there isn't, why do people have that knowledge? Now, this argument may not even ring a bell with you, but it does with me. It really rings a bell. It's convincing. Now, number two, design in the universe. Design in the universe. Every way you look, there is design. There is design in the big things. There is design in the microscopic things. Freddie and I, that's my wife, I need to explain that somehow. Fred and I were talking the other day about the vegetarians that are so determined not to eat anything but vegetables. But when they drink a glass of water, they drink animals galore. Well, they do. They're all in the air here. Kicking around. I mean, this. You tell me, oh, I'm going to get away from everything except vegetables. I'd like to see you do it. You quit drinking water because it's just teeming with little animals. You say, well, I can't see them. No, but they're there. You say, you mean I'm drinking animals every day? Yeah. And I'll tell you what, they're just as real as elephants. You know, Brother A.T. Powers was a personal friend of mine. He was like a father. And how many of you know A.T. Powers? You knew all of them. Well, he was a giant. When I put my hand in his hand, I felt like I, you know, had a side of meat or something. Just. He was so big. A fellow named Powell that used to live up close to the Missouri line, he was up like that. And I always, when I was around him, I'd have to, you know, I'd get a crick in my neck just looking up. But let me tell you, I'm just as real as they are. Just because I'm small doesn't mean I'm not real. I'm just as real as 300 pounds. And these little microscopic beings that you can't see without the aid of the microscope, other things, they're real, aren't they? And I tell you, you come down to even the structure of the cells, and they're according to design. Isn't that amazing? There is design every way you turn. You see design in the things that man makes. See, the chairs you sit in were designed and manufactured. The books we have were designed, written, manufactured. The watch, even though it's a Timex, was designed and built. And everywhere you look, the airplane, would anyone say that the airplane was an accident or that it evolved? No, it was designed. I had the privilege of seeing what they call the wind tunnels that the Wright brothers used in proving, you know, back in early aviation days that, well, they predicted, you know, that we were going to fly as birds. And they wrote to Washington, and Washington, D.C. thought they were off a little bit. I read letters up there, they just had to pull me away from that place. At wind tunnels where they tried to find out how and why they could fly. And the first flight wasn't very far, was it? But they designed a flying machine It flew for a short ways. Now we crisscross the continent and the world. And there's better and better designs in flight. But let me tell you, you ever watch a dove in flight? A dove. You remember the shape of the dove? And he is designed where there's, well, you can't beat his design as far as airflow is concerned. And did you know that the bones of birds are porous? They're not solid. They're porous. And their body temperature is much higher than ours. Some of these little birds are just mostly feathers and holy bones and hot air. Made to fly. Made to fly. They're designed to fly. And anyone that can't see that birds are designed to fly can't see much. Now, where there is a design, there is a designer. Now, won't that stand the test? Where there is design, there is a designer. Now, you take the submarine, which is actually not very old. Doesn't go back very far to the beginning of submarines. A submarine can go down into the depths and move through the water, and it can come up, you know, short ways and level off there, or it can come to surface. You ever watch fish in clear water? They're on display. They can do that better than man can. It's always been fascinating to me. Here's a fish, you know, in an aquarium of some kind. He's down on the bottom. He decides to move up a little bit. He moves up and steadies off there, you know. Move on up. How does he do it? Well, they've got a float. I don't know whether they can deflate that or I don't really know exactly how they can do it better than man can with a sub. And don't tell me that was accidental. They're better than anything that man has ever made. Fish are designed not for the land, but for the water. Submarines not designed to go over land. They're made in water, to go in water, right? Underneath the water. They were designed for that. Fish were designed for the water. And I say where there is a design, there is a designer. Who designed the fish? Someone did. You say they evolved. You know, I was amazed in checking the paper the other day where the evolutionists are giving our president-elect Hail Columbia because he doesn't believe in evolution. Says he has some serious questions about it. And so this is from the Arkansas Democrat, January the 7th, 81. It's from Toronto, Canada. Overwhelming evidence, it says, supports the theory of evolution. I don't believe that. And President-elect Ronald Reagan's expressed doubts are tremendously unfortunate. Scientists at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science said Tuesday. And then I quote Dr. Porter M. Keir, Evolution, he says, is a fact. Evolution is not a fact. Evolution has never been proven. It cannot be proven. What are the chances that all this would evolute what it is now? Back to my old illustration. Suppose in a print shop like they used to have when they used linotype, you know, and had a lot of type set up. And for some reason, there is an explosion. And all the type, you know, just goes up. Comes back down and lands in such a position that when they run it off, it is a Webster's Collegiate Dictionary. How many times do you think you have to have explosions until that would happen? What's your opinion on that? Wayne? What's the chance that everything just accidentally sort of fell into where it is now, evolved over? I tell you, folks, it takes a lot more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe in God. You know that? Like I told you about one man who said he believed that it all came from one cell. Then I asked him the question, where did that one cell come from? And he's the only fellow that I ever did have answer like he did. He said, I don't know, and it bothers me. Well, I think rightly he's to be bothered. In the beginning, God. Let me show you another example of design. The camel, I'm not talking about cigarettes, I'm talking about the animal, camel, is designed for the desert. He is designed for the desert. For instance, he has a built-in food supply and water supply so that he can go days without food or water to drink. What kind of feet does he have? His feet are pad-like structures, just a pad. Look at the animal in the zoo and see how his feet are pads. Now, suppose a camel had a foot like a cow or a hog. What drudgery, what exhausting energies would be spent in going just a few miles in the desert. The camel has very heavy set of eyebrows. Boy, you look at them, they're really heavy, cut out sun. And they got three sets, fasten your seatbelts, I'm telling you the truth. You got three sets of eyelids. And the inner one is constantly blinking. Keep out the sand. And if sand gets in there, get it out. And the camel can close his mouth and nostrils some way in an uncanny way where he can go right on the sandstone. Designed for the desert. It's just obvious. Now, did the camel evolve to that? Let me ask a question that's bothered me through the years. You know, salmon, the fish, the fish we call salmon, they have a way of going up the rapid streams, and they do what we call shoot the rapids. They can do the incredible, going up over a fall. Well, if evolution is so, why don't they have some wings by now? They've been shooting the rapids for a long time. They ought to have some suggestion of wings. Why not? But they don't have. They just shoot the rapids like they did 1,000 years ago. Well, I was thinking about another little fowl called the ouzel. Lives on the mountain streams and on the Pacific coast. And they're one of the most buoyant of all birds, I'm told. They just float along on the water like a breeze. And then, if they decide to, they can just sink to the bottom like a rock and walk out on the bottom and then just come back on the top of the water just like this, like grease. How'd they do it? They've got an apparatus that enables them, a muscular apparatus that they can exhaust, you know, all the air, and they can just go down. Come back up. All that's accidental? No, they're creatures of design. You ever think about chicken? You know, that's a whole list of all fowls. More men are the ministry than any other. That's right. You ever stop to think about the chicken, how he's designed for the land? You know, he's not. Chicken's not designed for water. Everything about him shows you that he's designed for the land. Now the duck is designed for the water. You observe the difference. And observe the difference in the bill, the beak. And here's an interesting thing about various birds. This, to me, it's interesting and instructive and helpful to read this. You take a bird, for instance, that feeds primarily on seeds, grass seeds and so on. That bird will not have a sharp beak, but it'd be rather blunt, though. While those that feed on meat, like the hawk, the eagle, will have a beak designed for that. Now, out west, there is a bird, and I don't even remember the name of it, if I ever knew it, but it feeds on worms in the sand between high tide and low tide. And it has a long beak to go down in the holes in the sand to get those worms. But if you put that long beak down in the hole in the sand, then how are you going to open up and get the worm? Well, sir, the Lord done fixed up that bird where about 2 or 3 inches from the tip of his beak is little forceps that work independently. I'm not making this up, but and work that force and get that worm, bring it on out without getting a mouthful of sand. Don't tell me that's accidental. There's a bird made for a purpose, and he's designed to do that. You know, the duck He's not very elegant out on land, is he? Just, you know, you watch it, a goose, swan, let them get out on land. They just, you know, waddle along. Put them in the water, they're graceful. Got web feet, yeah. Man, they got feet. And their feathers are waterproof. They're made to float, made to swim. And there is a fowl called the coot, or we call it, when I grew up, mud hen, which can operate on land or in the water. He has webs, but when he gets on land, those webs fold over, and he make it on land. And then when he heads into the water, why, he can open up and take off. So he's twofold. He can operate in what we call mud hen. He can operate on land or in water. All that's accidental? I don't think so. What about man? Aren't we creatures of design? Wonderfully, fearfully made. Let me ask you something. Can you imagine the mouth? Can you imagine your mouth being anywhere on your body except where it is? Let's put it up here. Now, you start to eat, and you're always getting food down in your eye. Why do you think about eating soup or well, it's put it somewhere else, anywhere except right where it is. Try to think of your nose being somewhere else. Can you feature it turned up, you know, with the holes up? You get out in the shower rain? Can you feature your ears anywhere except where they are? Well, come on, some of you are smart. Where would be a better place? And your eyes, where they're placed, and the protection they have. When you talk about some cameras, we have some good cameras today. There's some all marvelous cameras being designed, but there's no camera like the eye. All color. It's better than anything man can build. It's design. It's design. And let me tell you, if you take a cell from my body, your body, that cell has got a genetic code, which means it's got the same genetic makeup as every other cell in your body. You know that? You take a cell from your body, and there's a genetic code, and there's no other person in the world with exactly that same. Wonderfully and fearfully made. Made according to design. Well, once again, when you see design, you must conclude there is a designer. Now, who designed all these things? The answer is God. Do you know a better answer? In the beginning, God. Now, next, what is God like? can we find out what God is like? No, not completely. And the reason why is because he is infinite. And you and I are finite. Let me ask you this. Do you think you could measure the Pacific Ocean with a teacup? You believe you could do that? No, I don't believe you could yet. How long would it take? And how would you? No, I don't believe you could. Well, let me back up and give another illustration, one I've given before. Can you put this building in a teacup? Said, well, no, it won't go. In God's mind, the infinite God with his infinite works just won't go in our finite mind. Infinite means without finish or end. That's God. Finite means with a finish or an end or a limitation. That is where we come in. We are limited in our grasp. We cannot, as finite beings, fully grasp the infinite. You see what I mean? But there are certain things we can learn about God. And I think the first thing, and if you'll read your book, now if you don't read that book, something bad's going to happen to you. I know it will. It ought to. No, but it might. Wouldn't take a chance. Study that first chapter. Second chapter. Keep ahead of it. How many gods are there? One? Yes. One God. Now, listen to this in 1 Corinthians 8:4. And you just listen and take notes. You'll find this in your book. As concerning, therefore, the eating of those things which are sacrificed to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world. There is none other God but one. There is one God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Deuteronomy 6:4, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. Now, there's just one God. I like to think of it this way, and I'm not going to tell you that my thinking is completely satisfactory, because somehow I cannot grasp fully the Trinity, and I don't believe anyone else can. I've heard a lot of illustrations supposed to make it clear, and I haven't got it completely clear in my mind yet, and I don't think you will either. But I like to think of it like this, as God the Father and God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. I think they are distinct and separate in the sense that they are beings. And yet they are one in nature and one in purpose and one in everything. When Jesus was baptized, he walked about 60 miles to John, Jordan River, to be baptized. And when he was baptized, the Holy Spirit descended like a dove upon him. And God the Father spoke out from heaven and said, this is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased. Well, there's the triune God manifested. I don't know. I'll give you some illustrations that have helped me, but I don't think that the Trinity is anything but unity in any direction you turn. I don't think they're ever one against the other or separated in any way. There is oneness, absolute oneness. Now God is a person. Be that? He's person. He's not just an influence or a principle. He is a person. Created the world in the beginning, God. In the beginning, God created the heavens and earth. His personal being. He created man. So he's a person. He's active. He's intelligent. And as we said, he is a Trinity. Yet you will not find the word Trinity in the Bible. Do you? The idea is there, but it is not, the word Trinity is not found. Many people say, well, if the Bible doesn't mention Trinity, we don't have Trinity. Well, if the Bible teaches a Trinity, then we should believe that there is a triune God. Three persons in one. Now, I do not think we can fully comprehend this. I don't think we can fathom it. I think Dr. Foreman has a good illustration. He said you put water on fire, gets hot, turned into steam. And then make water cold enough and it'll freeze, so it's solid. And then you have as a liquid. And yet, whether it's steam or ice or a liquid like you drink, it is H2O. Two parts of hydrogen, one part of oxygen. Right? So ice is a manifestation of water, but it's the same as the liquid. Steam is H2O, ice, H2O, liquid. H2O. The sun that shines is heat, light, energy. Not three suns, but you do have heat, light, energy. Now let's think of God's attributes. Number one, he is eternal. What does that mean? He is eternal. Psalm 92, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hadst formed the earth, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. From everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. Isaiah 40:28, hast thou not known, hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. The everlasting God. Did God have a beginning? No. Will he have an ending? No. Well, let me tell you, a little child can ask you a question that you can't answer. And I've had it happen. Maybe it's a warm, sunny summer day. Junior looks at the clouds and says, "Daddy, who made the clouds?" Well, you answer, "God made the clouds."